As we light the chalice, there are some opening words from Linda Gregg. Cruelty made me. Cruelty and the sweet-smelling earth and the wet scent of bay. The heave in the rumps of horses galloping. Heaven forbid that my body not perish with the rest. I have smelled the rotten wood after rain and watched maggots writhe on dead animals. I have lifted the dead owl while it was still warm. Heaven forbid that I should be saved. You might have heard the old thing about the old-fashioned preacher who was asked how he organized his sermons. He said, well, first they tell him what I'm going to tell him. Then I tell him what I just untold him. So in keeping with that idea, I thought I'd give you a one-sentence summary of what I'm going to tell you. A worldwide civil religion based on nature philosophy and scientific ideas could be a way out of the trap which the world has become. Until the last couple of centuries, the Western nations shared a tradition known as natural law. This was not exactly the same thing as what we now call the laws of nature. Natural law was a kind of condensation of common sense notions that were considered common to all people. For example, there is a natural right to self-defense for anyone who is attacked. Certain types of property rights were considered normal and natural. Natural law was based on tradition and on abstract reasoning. In other words, it was basically deductive. You started from some common assumptions, and from that you deduce certain norms. The just war theory of Catholic thought grew out of something like the natural law tradition. It gave people of different religions a way that they could talk about some common concerns. All modern and modernizing nations agree on established scientific principles based on empirical knowledge and reasoning, an inductive system, in other words, where you gather evidence, you make generalizations, and then you determine that they actually operate in reality. So it's a different approach. For example, when building a bridge, Newton's laws apply, whether in China, India, or the United States. Tribal peoples come out of the forest to seek modern medical care, even as they continue shamanic healing methods back in the village. Despite this agreement on practical applications of natural laws in the scientific sense, science has not as yet yielded much in the way of common ethical or political norms. In general, the modern social institution in science, and this is a huge, massive social institution, has been built up with investments from both governments and private organizations, and also rich benefactors. And in many ways, science is our modern religion. Just as the people of the forest hang on to their old ways and beliefs, even as their worldview creaks and shifts as they accept Christianity and other novel beliefs, so we too hang on to our religious traditions, Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism. While we shift a good deal of our weight and our real life choices to a new basis in the scientific worldview, better things for better living through chemistry, science, our benefactor. Progress is our most important product. This means scientific and technical progress, leading to a rising standard of living, which is a payoff. Human life is improved in some way. And on the whole, the real purpose which has driven social investment in the increasingly expensive institutions of science has been the increase of human power over nature, which is thought to lead to an improvement in the human condition. No other society has ever believed that the human condition could be improved. That is, you know, cumulatively over time, it'll get better and better. Individuals or specific groups might gain greater wealth and power, but humans as a whole, no. But the results of this new departure have been impressive. Medical miracles, for example, trauma care that we have today is absolutely sensational. More and more powerful weapons of war, air and space travel, Great machines carving out valuable resources from nature, from forest and sea, even from the bowels of the earth, no longer considered taboo as in former times. Vast increases in agricultural productivity, whole nations lifted up to a middle-class level of material life. Discovery of nature's laws, its hidden order, enables new forms of exploitation and domination and creates immense wealth for those who are well-placed within the modern system. Has it actually improved the human condition for all and everywhere? Not yet. Not only are many left out living in poverty, but all must live under the shadow of the bomb and of ongoing ecological collapse. There is, however, another side to science. So far, I have emphasized the place of science within today's society. For the first few centuries of modern scientific advance, most discoveries were made by gifted amateurs, gentlemen or clergy who were practicing science as a hobby or avocation. So their motives were not the same as what the investment in science became later on. What was it that drew these men into their researches? Their motives were philosophical, not practical or financial. And meanwhile, while this was going on, most of the technological advances of the early modern period were the achievements of gifted tinkerers and inventors and mechanics whose knowledge of physics and chemistry was limited to practices without much theory. Windmills, canals, the power loom, the first steam engine were the products of their efforts. Accident also played a role, as in the invention of dynamite and of the process for vulcanizing rubber or the discovery of penicillin. Only in the 20th century did high theory begin to yield practical results, otherwise unattainable. Without Einstein, no bomb. The philosophical scientist seeks understanding. The laws of nature and of nature's God, in Jefferson's phrase, were the object of early scientists. Since God, the creator, was a rational mind, the architect and designer of the cosmos, author of nature, it should be possible to think God's thoughts after him as we trace out the inherent structures and patterns and repetitive processes of the world we live in. Nature is rational, and we may confirm this through experiment. Alexander Pope wrote in the 18th century, "And God said, let Newton be, and all was light." Science is benign, giving support to religious belief and also eventually practical advantages to us, the hairless, fangless weaklings of nature. So it was thought by the leading people of the 18th century. But now the plot thickens. One science arose among the many that is somewhat of an orphan, the poor country cousin, which has little in the way of spectacular equipment. A bit of an embarrassment, really, because its methods and perspectives are out of sync with the general program of science as a great social institution and improver of the human condition. It is as if this one branch of science were still the province of starry-eyed amateurs, poetic visionary seeking knowledge for its own sake, rather than knowledge as a means to human power and advantage. Insight into the ways of God in the world, perhaps, but promising few immediate payoffs. I speak, of course, of ecology, the subversive science, a branch of biology that studies whole life communities, the field of mutual effects and interconnections of all the life forms in a region or ecological province. Each life form or species can live only in its own particular niche within the whole living system. Although it is true that living systems are always changing and evolving, and thus no niche is fixed forever. The object of study is this whole living system and its laws. Food chains, population dynamics, who's eating who, the interdependence and interconnectedness of all living things on Earth, flows of energy and materials through living systems. These things are the subject matter of ecology. Something ironic happens here, and this is my major point. Whereas physics grants us humans godlike power to destroy life on Earth and to visit the moon, whereas chemistry enables us to wipe out or decimate insects that obstruct our purposes, Whereas biology enables us to understand the intricacies of cellular life, leading to the development of ingenious new medical treatments, ecology says, go gently, mortals, be discreet. An antique wisdom. Humans, know your place. You too are among the animals, and the laws of life impose limits on your dreams of conquest and domination. Traditional thought sought regulatory principles considered to be grounded in the very nature of things in order to restrain the destructive and antisocial side of human potential. International law still to this day is grounded in elementary ideas of fairness and reciprocity and cooperation, as all seek to live in peace on this one earth for reasons of enlightened self-interest. In the past, it was assumed by all that we live in a moral universe and that a greater knowledge of nature's laws could actually provide additional support for moral behavior and the peaceful coexistence of peoples. Instead, science led to the development of weapons of mass destruction. Criminal minds gravitate toward the controls of these weapons. Today's society as a whole is being turned into a military assemblage. Methods developed to control populations in chaotic war zones are coming back home in the form of sophisticated surveillance systems designed to identify, they're designed to identify suspicious groups who may have subversive tendencies. True, you haven't committed a crime, but you might commit one. You are part of a suspect population sector, and guilt by association operates freely here. If you have enough of the markers they're looking for, then you're in that category. I mean, worst case, you're getting a no-fly list or something, even though you may have done nothing. So this is the way this is working. It's an application of, you know, systems theory and computerization and so on. The hypermasculine military mind lusts for full-spectrum dominance. You know, that's a phrase that comes out of government documents, right? Full-spectrum dominance, that's what the military wants. And it turns out not just dominance of battlefields, but in effect dominance of the whole planet, because after all, see, these things are all flowing together, and you have to nip it in the bud before it develops into something. You get the doctrine of preemptive war coming out of the same way of thinking. We're on it, folks. You're not going to get a step ahead of us here. So science has gradually become the handmaiden of this dream of total control. Exterminate all useless life, damaging insects, plants that have no use in our society. Wild and uncontrolled landscapes which serve no purpose save the need for natural beauty cultivated by a small and privileged cultural elite. And people, too, those identified by Henry Kissinger as useless eaters, those who serve neither as consumers nor as producers, are standing in the way of progress. Our own minds are being taken over, drafted into service as the most terrible weapons of all. Drive an SUV and be safe from the others, the dark horde that populate the feral core of the world's cities, including even those here at home. You know, this is a mobile capsule of safety. Make sure you end up on the side of the controllers and their lethal technologies, not among the useless masses of the control. Better predator than prey is increasingly the maxim of our time. Ecology stands unperturbed by these horrific developments. Ecology says, continue in the direction you are going, and you will get to where you are headed. Your dreams of total control will not be fulfilled. Full spectrum dominance will not be achieved. In the very nature of things, you will pay the price of your delusions of grandeur. Rein in your fantasies. Trim your sails before you fall into an abyss from which there will be no exit. You, oh man, are violating the laws of nature and of nature's God, and so entering into a tragic and unavoidable destiny, unless you repent. Unless you change your way of thinking, unless you undergo a radical renewal of your minds. Thus says the Lord, thus far and no farther shall you go. That is the Lord's science. As we know, this is the underpinning of our whole society. For some reason, we don't listen to this part. No one, so far as I know, denies that ecology is a genuine science. And in addition to ecology, we have a little bit of physics that we probably have all heard about, the second law of thermodynamics. And this says, to put it in a colloquial way, after you have burned the oil, there is no way to reverse the process and get the oil back. These processes go one way. It's a one-way street. And as we use everything up, we're going to be on Earth where there won't be any more. Science says no to endless growth. It ain't going to happen. Once you used it up, it's gone forever. And then there are also the findings of climate science, which could be viewed as a sort of extension of ecology in some ways on a world scale. One worldwide interconnected weather system, immensely complex and beyond our control, and moving in a direction that will prove hazardous to us, the paragons of creation. Here's a little poem by the Norwegian poet Rolf Jacobsen. I think it goes back to the 50s. The roads have come to their end now. They don't go any farther. They turn here. Over on the earth there. You can't go any farther if you don't want to go to the moon and the planets. Stop now in time and turn to a wasp's nest or a cow track, a volcano opening, or a clatter of stones in the woods. It's all the same. Something else. They won't go any farther, as I said, without changing the engine to horseshoes, the gear shift to a fir branch which you hold in your hand. What the hell is this? Science, not as a means of domination, but as a way to understand how things are, offers, in my opinion, a possible basis for understanding among peoples, peace, and cooperation. What I call Earth loyalty means passionate adherence to a way of life grounded in actual knowledge of Earth, of the life processes, which are the only possible basis of our continuation as a species on this planet. The various fundamentalisms lead only to partisan idolatries and vainglorious wars. We require a universal view. Science has provided a basis for fundamental agreements if we care to use it that way. We are all together here on this one Earth, which is our only home. The only way out of our predicament is to turn back to the earth and submit to its laws. The very word Islam means submission. We may find this disgusting and backward, but all spiritual traditions include an element of submission. One must bow to the greater powers, however they are conceived and imagined. But this does not go down well with the man of the modern age, who imagines that he is the culmination and pinnacle of all human history and culture to date. The wise voices of the ages say, man, you are too elated. You are bloated with the false and empty imagining of your place. No, cast away these barren dreams and know your place. Discover the truth about where you fit in. And now this from Canto 81 of Ezra Pound, after he'd been saved from execution as a traitor by being put in the mental hospital. The ants, the centaur in his dragon world, pull down thy vanity. It is not man made courage, or made order, or made grace. Pull down thy vanity, I say, pull down. Learn of the green world what can be thy place in scaled invention or true artistry. Pull down thy vanity, pack and pull down. The green cask has outdone your elegance. At the present time, the Western virus has spread to the whole world. China now leads the charge toward infinite growth in a finite world. The oldest continuous culture on Earth in which ideas of balance and of humans as a part of nature came to elegant expression, has thrown its own tradition overboard, and is now joining us in the mad project of burning the ship in order to fuel the massive blast needed for liftoff as we slip the surly bonds of Earth and lose our senses altogether. I say let people maintain their religions and traditions as they will, while at the same time agreeing that Earth loyalty must be the binding obligation upon us all. Let Earth loyalty function in today's situation as natural law did in the past, a way we can all work together toward common understandings of the human condition in our time, the necessities imposed on all by the very nature of things. Let them all work out ways to reconcile this notion with their traditions, so that Earth loyalty will appear simply as the expression of traditional insight in a form appropriate to the era we are now entering. Just as in the U.S. we have had a civil religion which binds us into a provisional and workable unity, while at the same time we espouse a wide variety of churches and sects, so let Earth loyalty become the civil religion of all people everywhere, even as they continue their various religious traditions, modifying and adapting them as seems appropriate to them. The age of Earth domination is over with. It is finished. The age of Earth loyalty is beginning, grounded in the new old understanding of the laws of nature and of nature's God, which may be found in the science and worldview of ecology. So maybe we should leave it there, and let's see. There are some closing words as we extinguish the chalice from Joseph Bruchac, part of whose ancestry was Abenaki Indian, called Canticle. Let others speak of harps and heavenly choirs. I've made my decision to remain here with the earth. If the old great poet felt he could turn and live with the animals, why should I be too good to stay and die with them? And the great road of the Milky Way, that sky trail my Abenaki ancestors strode to the last happy home, does not answer my dreams. I do not believe we go up to the sky unless it is to fall again with the rain.